welcome to, or welcome back, to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely in a world given back to us. This is Wade here in the studio with my co-host, Peter Hermanson, who is less baby-faced when last we met. I think his daughters must have convinced him to come back to his manhood and grow some hair on his face. We're also very pleased to have in studio, a.k.a. my office, a.k.a. the Beat Factory, two guests with us today. My oldest son, Nicholas, who we'll introduce first, two-time WSCO math champion, could not pass up the opportunity to talk about math today. Nicholas, why don't you say hello?
Hello.
Very good. We're very pleased to have you with us. Nicholas, you told me the other day that math is your favorite subject in school, huh?
Yes.
Do you think that would be the case if we had hugged you more as a child?
I'm not sure.
My wife is an accountant and also very good at math. It's long past the point where I can help any of the kids with it, and it's good to see our oldest, at least, the oldest few, enjoying the subject. We're also very pleased to have with us a mathematician in the office, in the studio today, Dr. Christy Meyer, who I will note is our first adult female on the show. So if we ever make up an award for adult females, we will be sure to name it after her. Dr. Christy Meyer teaches math here at the college where I teach theology. We're very pleased to have her with us as we talk about mathematics. And Christy, would you like to say anything about yourself?
Sure. So I got my undergraduate degree here at the college and then spent five lovely years in the cornfields of Ames, Iowa.
Excellent. You don't know this, Christy. I don't want to interrupt you, but we've been very concerned about our demographic in Iowa and wanting to get that up. I had forgotten that connection. So please do pull out all the stops to reach out to your Iowa friends. I'll let you continue now your PhD.
We will absolutely try to promote in Iowa, yes. So PhD at Iowa State and then have been teaching back here at the college for 11 years.
Well, we're very happy to have you with us. Christy, together with one or two colleagues here at the college, is it?
Two.
Two with Angela Abling and
Rebecca Parker-Fidua.
And Rebecca Parker-Fidua have an article coming up in a upcoming issue of Logia. Some of you might be familiar with that journal, and I believe it's on Why a Lutheran, or something along those lines?
Why I Am a Lutheran.
Why I Am a Lutheran. And we're glad you are, and we're glad to have you in here with us, as we will be today looking at why math, why should the Christian or why should a citizen in general appreciate math and what benefits does it bring as a gift that has been given back to us for us to be studying or at least thinking about. With that in mind, as always, we want to get started with our disclaimer. Our computer janitor, Ben, is not with us today, possibly protesting the presence of a woman in the office. We'll put the best construction on it and assume that that is true. Ben, by the way, I think we can still add the reminder if anyone should want to sue us. I believe he is at home counting his money right now, and he would be the one to go after. Of course, none of that is true of Ben, but we will let Peter read the disclaimer just in case anyone should want to go after us, which would mean going after Ben.
This show does not speak for our churches, our church bodies, or our employers. To be honest, much of the time, it probably doesn't speak for us. We will be thinking out loud a lot, so approach what you hear with a healthy bit of skepticism. Because, well, as a responsible resident of planet Earth, that's probably what you should generally do with almost everything. If you find yourself getting too worked up, tune out, look around, and realize you are listening to a podcast. That's right, a podcast. So go live free, friends, and don't let us get in the way.
Us to our scripture reading for this episode. It took a while to find one about math, but I think I've managed to do so. As we'll be looking at Matthew 18, verses 21 and 22. Matthew 18, you might be familiar with or not familiar with, is the great chapter on how to deal with brothers and sisters in Christ, especially if we've fallen into error or into sin, how to lovingly win each other back. And so the issue will come up of how often we should forgive others. And so since it's two verses, I'll just briefly read it. Then Peter came up and said to Jesus, "Lord, how often will my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? As many as seven times." Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you seven times, but 70 times seven times." And those are our verses for today, and I will challenge Nick with a little bit of math here. I see he's off his cell phone now. I'm assuming he was doing something important with memes. Nick, what is 70 times 7?
210.
70 Wait, times
four,
7.
490.
There we go. We all get an extra shot in life. 490. And so the answer to Jesus' statement then is we should forgive each other 490 times, and I think that brings us to the end of our scripture narrative, and we can get going.
Sometimes scripture is so clear, it just makes it all perfectly obvious for us.
Yeah, so I think my wife is at about 489 with me, so I better take it careful. No, in all seriousness, what I want to get after there is Peter is not being harsh here. Some hear that and think, well, Peter doesn't want to have to forgive more than 7 times. Peter actually is being rather generous. Some of the rabbis taught you should forgive 3 times. And so Peter's more than doubling that, if my math is correct, and trying to be generous. But Jesus drives home this point that we as Christians are a people of forgiveness. And with the story that follows, the parable of the unforgiving servant, he will drive home that we are a people of forgiveness because we have been forgiven. There will never be more I can forgive in my neighbor than God has forgiven in me, which is a nice way to bring us to our discussion last week of physics and this week of mathematics of how to live free as a forgiven people. What are we set free for? And we're set free to serve our neighbor in a variety of ways, but also in a variety of disciplines, and also to enjoy a variety of things in the world, in the life of the mind, and in vocation, and all of these things. And so as forgiven people, we will be looking at today this discipline, this field of mathematics given back to us as a gift by which we might serve our neighbor and also might come to appreciate better our Creator God and His creation. And so with that in mind and forgiveness, we will press forward into our free-for-all.
Free-for-all, and since we have a guest, we always have to start with our the most pressing question of the day, and that is, Christy, you're a baseball fan, I trust, right?
I am a baseball fan. Yeah.
So we've been asking this question, and maybe at this point it's not even worth asking anymore, but designated hitter or the pitcher hits?
So I have to say that I do appreciate Wade's discussion about the fact that the DH makes the game shorter, which
I
totally agree.
That brings us to a wonderful answer to the question.
Which I totally agree, because working at the stadium, my part-time job is working down at Miller Park, and the Brewers are unable to play a game in under 3 hours. They just can't do it. So I appreciate the DH in that way. However, the trade-off for real baseball trumps the length of the baseball game, and so I am going to say absolutely have the pitcher bat.
I feel like I just got marriage counseled here, kind of. There's a famous book in the, I think it was the 90s, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And it said when dealing with each other, always to lead with a compliment and then, you know, ease into the butt. And I got all excited here, I think, just to be slapped down. I'm still going to remain steadfast in my disagreement. I think this is the first week we're divided 50-50 in the room, as Nicholas is back, and he agreed with me with the DH.
That's why you brought him back, huh?
Exactly, to even the odds. Along those lines, and respecting your position while disagreeing, I believe I saw in the news the other day, you mentioned working down at the stadium, that one of the Atlanta Braves called Miller Park a Little League field or something along these lines. Have you seen this at all?
I have not, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I think I saw it in the journal. Sentinel will have to check it out. I don't know what he was after with it. I enjoy Miller Park, but I was curious if you had heard that, if that was firing you up a little bit extra.
At this point in the season, anything that will fire the Brewers up is great. I'll take it.
Well, excellent. And I will say, I think they're ahead of the curve on the rebuilding effort here, though. They've given away some games, especially against the Cubs, that they really had a chance at, and I think they're pressing forward better than many expected at this point, even while my Tigers are doing their best to implode in the classic fashion bullpen style that they've been doing. With that in mind, Peter, why don't you introduce our main free-for-all topic for today, and we can dive into it.
Dealing with the pressing questions of the day, once again, our free-for-all question, seeing as we have an educator in the room once again, we'll ask, modern education, does it make us smarter or dumber? Or, to put it another way, modern education, does the extra time spent in the classroom benefit us?
And as we get started, maybe our guest who is in the Petri dish himself, Nicholas, would like to just briefly, because she might get mad if she listens and you don't, we talked about your performance in the math meets, although you kind of undermined that with your 210 answer. Which
I meant to do that.
We will not edit that out. But why don't you briefly just mention your math teacher so she can be happy if she listens.
My algebra teacher is Mrs. Abling.
All right, very good. So we've got Mrs. Abling, her shout out. Nick, you are a product of modern education. Do you feel like the hours you're spending in school, if you're looking at it, what do you think you get the most out of the various ways that you guys learn things or do things? What do you think you're getting the most out of in school?
I think work that doesn't take too much challenge is the best, because once you feel like you're not getting pressured, you feel less upset about the work. I'll go with that. And the better you feel about the work, the more enthusiastic you are to do it, and I feel like that will probably make it stick better. I'm also saying that because I want less homework.
I think the honesty coming out there in the end, I think we have a proto-millennial with us here today. But interesting, and maybe that's something we can look at, how much should we be pushing students and how much are they getting out of what they do? And maybe before I put Dr. Meyer on the spot, from a humanities perspective, one of the things I think I've noticed, and I think it's been a big shift in how things have been approached, where I don't know that students are coming out necessarily better with more time in school, from a reading and writing standpoint, would be the drive, the push for creative writing as the main type of writing that students are doing as they come up through the educational process, in which they're writing about themselves or about their opinions, and so often and in such a way that sometimes those opinions become sacrosanct, and not to be challenged because they are their opinions, and that's one of the fun things in a philosophy course is to engage them and have them have to back up what they think or support it from elsewhere. But I do wonder, on the whole, being happy with the students I have here at the college and not at all complaining and having taught elsewhere where maybe the reading and writing wasn't quite as good. But I think when it comes to maybe critical thinking, even I ask students now how many of them have had civics or things like this, I think for the extra time we're maybe not where we've been in the past, that is in generally societally, but I wonder, Dr. Meyer, at one of the areas where I personally would assume maybe we're ahead of where we were at before would be math and science, but I don't know if that's so because I'm not in math or science classes, but any ideas you might have
on
that?
You're not in math or science?
No, right? And what? On purpose.
Really?
If I am, I'm lost. We had our undergraduate research seminar the other day, and I'm on co-curricular committee, so I chaired two sessions, and the first one was humanities, and so I understood everything, and the second one was biology and botany, and I think part of it might have been revenge for my botany joke with Dr. Keene last week when he was on, but I have to say they were fantastic presentations, and I could tell they were well done, but I understood almost nothing, and I was kind of proud of that they're doing work I couldn't understand. But that'll take us to Dr. Meyer. What do you think in general, not necessarily just our students, but just in general, as the American educational system, are we ahead of where we were in math or science, or are we throwing so much at them maybe that we're not getting the core stuff?
I think it's a little bit of both. And I think I see, we'll talk about my students in particular and then back it off a little bit. My students probably have more background and more content knowledge than they did coming in when I first started teaching 10 years ago. But you talked about critical thinking, and I think that's the piece that is maybe getting left behind at the expense of all of this content knowledge, especially with kids being so used to using calculators from, I don't know what, third grade, fourth grade, something like that. They have no concept of whether their answer is correct or not, and we won't go back to 210, but they have no concept of whether the answer is right or whether it's wrong or whether they're anywhere in the ballpark, and that's the part I think that we're not doing them a service, that they're great at walking through the steps step by step, but if something goes wrong in the middle, they don't know that it is. And so a little bit of both, a little bit of both, I think.
Well, and that's something I'd like to come back to when we get to our main topic, is the how math can help with critical thinking and maybe how we can use that as a tool for helping students, maybe in a math class, getting prepared for a philosophy or theology class as well. Peter, yourself, having, like me, have been a professional student for a while, someone who I think has enjoyed being in the classroom and challenged. When it comes to philosophy or history, the other things you've studied and worked in, what are your general thoughts, having been in classrooms in a variety of ways?
Well, I feel dumber than students of yesteryear, for sure. So, I mean, I don't know if that that answers anything. No, I've actually just been reading about this a fair amount lately, and the change in modern education. And suffice it to say, I'm not a fan of Dewey. I prefer the classical model of education. And when people turn around and say, well, then they don't learn math and science, I just think, well, that's probably because you don't know how numerology is studied in, or numeracy is studied in the classical model. But yeah, I mean, I could go on and on. I shouldn't. So,
Peter mentioned the classical model, and that is a good way to get him to talk for about 2 hours. If you get him out to the bar and you buy him a couple beers, he will educate you on that and his appreciation for
it. Oh, bloviate, right?
Bloviate. That's a good word. What's the other one that's good on that one? Pontificate. That's yeah. A good Lutheran word. Associations with the Pope there. I do wonder, Christy, what do you think? Here we're at a liberal arts college, and one of the things I enjoy about a lot of the faculty and you're one that we're able to get together in different settings sometimes and talk about such things. What do you think, from a math perspective, are any benefits, or do you think there are benefits or interests that you have in your students who are maybe coming through and are going to be math majors, getting exposed over here on the humanities side of life?
Absolutely. I think that it's really cool for them to see areas outside of their comfort zone. And we can argue whether the liberal arts are taught because they're practical or because they're the liberal arts. But either way, it's a super good exposure for students to have and for them to see that there is stuff outside the math and science classrooms in their major that they're getting to. So I would absolutely push theology and the philosophy and the English and give them a broad base, let them be an educated citizen and be able to talk with people besides the fact that they just have the math and science.
I think that's an excellent point. And from our side, I think for our students to be over in Generac too, to be pushed to dig into the world outside of their discipline and comfort zone. And so I appreciate those thoughts. Nicholas, if you were to think to your classroom, out of curiosity, if you were to survey your room, now without saying anything derogatory, only positive, if you were to think through your school day and survey your room, what do you think overall, if you had to pick most people's favorite subject, and it can't be gym, you think there would be more who would be interested in math and science or more in English and history?
I'm not quite sure, but my guess would probably be science and maths, because history and English is kind of, I'm just going to say it, it's boring.
What's your dad's doctorate in again?
I'm just going to say history, but I'm going to ignore that and move on.
Yeah, well, interesting. I do wonder, you know, from the elementary education up, you know, where the emphasis and the interest lies, and there's a lot of, you know, STEM and how that factors in. But it sounds like if we're just going to go around the table, that there's plenty of challenges in every discipline. As maybe we go to school longer than ever before, but perhaps, and Christy, you can tell me if I'm reading wrong on this one, perhaps we are getting so specialized in some things that we're coming out unable, and partly because of dependency on technology, but less able to kind of discuss and critically think through.
No, I would agree with that. And I think that it's easy for us as professors to fall into that too, right? It's super easy to teach classes in your discipline and stay within your discipline and never walk outside and think about stuff that you don't teach and you aren't an expert on in the everyday classes that you're doing. And so it applies to students, but it applies to us as educators as well, that we should step outside our comfort zones and be learning as much as we can in other areas also.
I think that's a helpful caution and probably a good one for me. I do try to get over to the science building, to Generac, sometimes, but the glowing room next to 105 where Henkel's growing whatever diseases or whatever else is going on in there always does somewhat scare me.
That one's fun. It's also fun when the building occasionally smells like fish, so you should come over on one of those days too. Yeah.
as long as it's not diseased fish, it's the dying aspect that scares me the most.
Wade really does have a concern about this glowing room. He's brought it up a number of times now. Yeah. I think he might be losing sleep over it. It's the death aspect.
I mean, I don't know if I'm quite ready for it. I haven't quite figured out, you know, how the whole heaven thing works. I hope I've been good enough. But I'm just joking. My students, hopefully, if they're listening, would be able to correct me on that. I think with that, we've probably talked a fair amount about the free-for-all. We can maybe make our way into our main topic. Start with some questions that have been weighing heavily upon me. I think it's important that we all have a sense of humor, and so I'm going to pray that Christy will have one with me. We talked about forgiving 490 times, and I do not have 490 questions. We'll leave it to her to answer as she sees fit, or if Nicholas wants to jump in with something on topic, he can feel free to do so. But my first question would be, Christy, is math real?
There is a famous quote that said that God invented the integers, so that's the counting numbers, and everything else is the invention of man. So I'll let you, the philosopher, think about that quote, both you and Peter, and you can take the question then.
Excellent. Right back at me. I like it. This is good. All right. Why did math ruin pie?
Why did math ruin pie?
Pie, delicious. I love it. But now math seems to try to be making it its own. We're supposed to have pie on this day that's for math pie instead of just enjoying pie for pie.
I would say that math is selling pie instead of ruining pie. We've gotten way more out in the supermarkets to get the awareness of pie up. So you can thank math for giving you more varieties of pie on Pie Day. How about that?
I like this. Wow. This hashtag pie awareness. This can go with the campaign. Nick has a thought about math and pie.
I think that you're taking the American standpoint on this. You're thinking about the food instead of the intelligence.
Are you trying to say I'm fat, Nicholas?
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't think there's a maybe about it. I think it's important that we be speakers of truth. Christy, is algebra so 2016?
We had an equation in Bible class this morning. It actually got balanced. And it worked out. Yep. Uh-huh. It was all good. And I had the entire room staring at me. So I would say that algebra is still relevant today. We still need it.
Wow.
Have calculators made people dumber, or is it impossible to make people dumber?
I don't think that's an either or. I think that's a yes. We'll go with yes.
I like it. Coming from the humanities, and we've had all kinds of questions about objective truth or relativity, can 2 plus 2 equal 5 if I want it to? And if not, why are you such a bigot?
It can't equal 5, but it can equal 3 if you want it to.
All right, now I'm confused.
Totally serious.
Uh-oh. Should we unpack this, Peter?
I don't know. Well, I was going to say, I was in a computer programming class once, and the instructor clearly demonstrated that 2 plus 2 can equal 5. So,
All right, I want to hear the 3. Is this something that can be brought down to my level?
I don't know, mate. Well, sure, absolutely. So let's not do 2 plus 2, but let's do a clock. So on a clock, right, you've got 60 minutes. And so if you have 30 minutes after the hour and then you add 40 minutes, it's really 10 minutes after the next hour. So 30 plus 40 is equal to 10. You can do the same thing with 2 and 2 and have it equal 3. How's right, that?
This is kind of blowing my mind. You're doing better than Dr. King did. He at this point was riding on the ropes. Multiplication table, lie of the devil, or an elementary school torture device?
Yes.
Yes. I like that. I like that. See, Jesus throws this multiplication at Peter, and then it stumps Nicholas over here with his 210.
I need my calculator.
But if you got the wrong answer on your calculator, would you know it?
I would get it marked wrong.
What music do you listen to in order to get pumped up for calculus? Is there any like math field specific music that you like to apply?
Yes, quadratic formula song, which I am absolutely not singing for you, but I'll let you Google it at some point in time. There are songs. It's
we'll have
great.
To put this in the show notes, Peter.
The quadratic formula
song. Yeah. I see Nick is already on his phone. Let's not play this out loud when the time comes, Nick, but you can save it for later. You're being exiled to an island, and you can only take one formula with you. What would it be?
Well, I do want to say dividing by zero, because the standard response for what do you get when you divide by zero is a magic pony. And that would be fun to have on a desert island with me. But that one's not super useful. So I think we'll be practical and we'll go back to the quadratic formula, because then I can sing to myself too.
Excellent. I'll admit I don't know what the quadratic formula is. The only one I know is the Pythagorean theorem. Is that
That's
the A squared, B squared? See, I remember that
there
one.
There you go.
Nick, you look excited about this.
You're at triangles. Good job.
Triangle? Yeah. Do you know what the quadratic formula is, Nicholas?
No.
Excellent. So why are you talking trash over there? That's right. Who wins in a fight, addition or subtraction?
I am going to say subtraction.
See, I think so too. I like this.
Because, well, you didn't ask me because, but I'll do a because anyway. Because it can just make everything go away. And addition can't do that. So that was really bad. What's the next one?
No, I like
subtraction will take you out.
Yeah, I agree as well. I agree. Why do the British say maths? Is it because they hate freedom?
Sure, we can go with that. I have no idea, but it sounds cooler. So I think we should start doing it here.
Yeah, I just know in grad school, sometimes I'd hear them say that maths, and that really bothered me. I don't think Jesus died on a cross for us to say maths, but I haven't looked what side Canada takes on this, but I think this could be important for our president to address if they are not with us on this issue.
I think this is one of those things where the rest of the world does it, and it's probably right, and we should probably come around to that way of doing it, but I think I'm also going to get kicked out of my job if I say that. Yeah. So
I think that could also be said of dictatorship,
yeah.
too.
I think that the British, they drop the S off of woods and put it on bath, right?
So that could be.
We go to the wood to do maths.
I do think the Australians say maths, too. This may be a world thing.
I think
it's like
is.
The metric system, probably,
yeah.
Which I also don't like because I don't understand it. So, to be honest, I can't tell you how much is in a gallon either, but at least I know what it looks like, namely a milk carton. But why is God so bad at math with three persons and one God and two natures and one Christ?
I think we're going back to 2 plus 2 can sometimes equal 3, and God is just trying to teach you that.
Uh-oh. I like this. It's being thrown right back at me. So my last question, my junior year of high school, I took math because my girlfriend was in the class, and I came in halfway through each class and said I forgot what lunch I had. And then before I could fail, I dropped it and became a student assistant for my Spanish teacher. Was that the last math class I took? Good decision or great decision?
This was not a good question to end on because I don't have anything witty for this one.
I would say actually it was a bad decision when I wanted to go to grad school. I had to take the GRE, and my wife now, who's very good at math, and I would have gladly taken math all semester and failed it for her. Had to literally take me over to the church where we had a chalkboard and a whiteboard or whatever it was, and work me through basic problems, and so I think it probably was a bad decision.
That is because no one ever taught you the quadratic formula song.
That's true, and I feel like the other one I remember is some old horse caught a horse tripping on acid. Sine or obtuse, acute, is that?
Sokotoa. Go with Sokotoa.
Sokotoa. Well, that's not what we learned.
All right. Well,
I don't think my teacher taught me that
so
one.
Yes,
but
yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that means either. Nick, do you know what is that sign or something? You know what sign is, Nick?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
We are back to triangles.
I think you might be the horse that was tripping.
That is back to triangles, huh?
We got triangles again.
We're at triangles. Hell of a see someone threw triangle shade at me before, but now you're back in your own wood and don't know the answer.
My own woods.
America.
We're doing maths here.
All right, I think that brings us to maybe some serious discussion of mathematics. And maybe just by way of intro, Christy, what specifically, do you enjoy or prefer working in mathematics, whether it be a current question or a specific area of it?
Yep. So my research area is cryptography, so secret coding, keeping information safe, which is absolutely super, super relevant with everything going on in technology and everything
today. With
the
Nazis, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And Putin.
And I do like to say that I'm a very theoretical cryptographer. I don't really care how much it works. I just want to know the stuff behind it, and the computer scientists can program it because that's what they get paid for. But I like that area of it. I like to take it back to the Nazis and the history. And
it always comes back to the Nazis.
And I think going back to liberal arts, it's a really good way to show students that this is actually useful, and this is math that's shown up in history and math that has changed the outcome of wars, and I don't think that's overstating. And so I think that's a cool application and a cool area to be involved in.
Well, it is fascinating. Just briefly, I know Nazis have come up, and I just want to let Peter know, please don't mention Heidegger at this point. That's kind of an interesting field and a fascinating field. I guess Peter and I, we've talked about wanting to do an episode on language at some point even. And it seems like that's math almost getting into communication or language as well as it's being used, whether it be to convey something or to stop some from being able to convey it. What do you would you say that a lot of the students who are taking those courses right now are coming out to find fields in that, or it's just something that can be of interest to them? I'm guessing there has to be a fair amount of demand for people who are competent with cryptography.
There is, absolutely. And the U.S. government is the largest employer of mathematicians in the country. So, yes, you can teach, and yes, you can get a job being an actuary, but you can definitely get a job with the government. And we've had several of our students go on to do work in that area, which is really, really cool. So there are a ton of opportunities available. Everybody always thinks that when you're a math major, the only thing that you can do is teach. And when people come and ask me what kind of job I can get, and I'll tell them anything you want, pretty much. It's anything you want you can do with a math major.
Now, how did you I'm guessing the cryptography, I mean, it's an old field. We've mentioned the wars and things of that nature. But what particularly drew you into that as an area of interest?
This is going to be a bad answer, and this is an answer of how not to pick your research area. It was my advisor. So my first year in grad school, I think I took two or three classes with the same professor and got along with him and decided that he would probably be a good choice to get me through grad school, which was very important in your first year of grad school. So that was his area, and it just happened that I stumbled into it. But it was a good choice, and it worked out well.
This takes us back to our free for all. The old German system of selecting your topic was done by your director,
yeah,
right? So
yeah.
I actually prefer that.
At that point, was this something already that was being connected a lot to the growth in technology and with computers and internet security and stuff like that, or is that something that was kind of coming later?
I would say it was at that point in time. Again, I'm more on the theoretical side of things. So I had to do a little tiny bit of coding and implementing for my degree, and that was the worst part of it by far. It was bad. But I had to take one or two classes outside of the math area, and so I took one in computer science and one in computer engineering, and there were definitely the computer engineering professor was kind and generous to me, and all the rest of the students had to actually implement this and make it work. And he said, "You can write a paper instead." And I said, "Thank you, sir, because otherwise I'm going to fail the class." So yes, it was. It's more now. I mean, it's more now with Bluetooth, obviously, and everything else in that area. But it was when I was in grad school, also.
Would you? Having studied that, and you mentioned the use of it in wars or just historically the importance of it, is there a specific instance or something historically that stands out to you that's been of particular interest?
I can talk about something specifically. In general, I think it's really interesting how it's switched from originally being linguistically based and now mathematically based. So the switch kind of happened right around World War II, and the British Bletchley Park is, if you're interested in this, that's the thing to look up. And there have been a couple movies on this recently, but that's kind of where the switch came in, that previously they were recruiting linguists to try to analyze the secret codes, and now it's very much a mathematicians and a computer scientist's game. And it's really cool to see that switch. When I teach the cryptography class, we offer a cryptography class here at the college, and when I teach the cryptography class, the students get all excited for the first 2 weeks because there's no math. And then we get
maybe
into
I
the
can
math.
Audit it for the first
you
two
can
weeks.
Audit for the first 2 weeks, right? Yes. Come in and tell history stories. And then we get into the math and they get sad because they actually have to work at it. But yeah, it definitely World War One was called the Chemist War. I've heard this because of all of the biological weapons used, the mustard gas and stuff like that. And World War II is really called the Cryptographer's War or Mathematician's War because of the use of the German Enigma machine to code everything and the swing of the war there. So I would say World War II is very much a cryptography event in history.
Huh. With, along those lines now, you talk about you're interested in the theoretical side, and I think that is something that's just fascinating about any field is you have people who need to be able to implement it, but you also need to be able to speculate, to think abstractly, or to step back and not so much ask, is this going to work, but to be pushing at bigger ideas or things of that nature. What draws you more to the theoretical side? Is it just that fits your thinking more? And along those lines, what do you see as being the benefit of having some who are just focused on the theoretical side and not simply on how are we going to implement this or make this work?
I think what draws me to the theoretical side is very self-serving, that I never learned well how to write a computer program, and I have no desire to do so right now. So I am not broadening my horizons, and I will stick with the theoretical side. Thank you very much. In terms of the benefit, especially as cryptography has gotten more mathematically based, there's been a desire to prove that the cryptosystem that you are using is actually secure. And there's a whole host of ways to do that, and I will start getting very technical very quickly, so I won't go into those. But the desire is to have a proof that this is actually something that's going to work and something that's going to be secure. And so that's where the theoretical side of this really comes into play, that you want to say this isn't something that's going to be broken, or it's going to be very difficult for this to be broken, and we can prove, we can demonstrate that that's really going to happen. So I think it's very much in tandem with mathematicians and computer scientists, that you need both the implementation, obviously, because otherwise it's just theory, but you need the theory as well, because otherwise you have no idea how secure the implementation is.
Huh. I'm understanding all of this, and I'm enjoying it greatly.
I'm not doing a good job if you're understanding.
No, you are doing a great job, Ben. Peter, do you have any thoughts or questions so far? I got one I'm going to come back to.
I have nothing.
You have nothing?
I'm just enjoying the conversation.
We have a mixing board now, so this is our first time having that, and Peter's been over there playing with that thing. This is his new toy, so I think we've distracted him with the buttons and the lights. He looks very happy.
Shiny buttons.
Yes. He's also the only one of us who gets to wear headphones right now. And he seems to be, it looks like he's managing things quite well over there. Christy and Peter may have some interest in this. You know, you think of mathematics and the Greeks and the ancients and how often this was connected, philosophers and mathematicians. And in many ways, I think that comes back to something we mentioned earlier of the critical thinking that goes into math. What do you think, you know, you may have a student like me who just math isn't their thing, and maybe they get through junior year math, but that's about as far as they get. But what, as a math instructor at the college level, but, you know, thinking of math instruction in elementary school or middle, high, and high school as well, what, beyond just teaching math, right, what can be the contribution of math to whether or not someone remembers the quadratic formula to gifting society with sharper minds?
Let me circle around a little bit and then come back to that question. So what frustrates me so very much, and I'm having an argument with someone about this right now, is when someone comes up to me and says, I'm not good at math, and they're proud of it. And that's like a thing that they are happy with and excited about. And you didn't say that, and I know you're not, but...
I will think, if it'll fire you up.
Great. So I think that there's a bias or stereotype that math has to be useful in order to be something worth studying. And if you look at it in other subjects, that is so totally not the case. You don't have to be good at art or understand all of the nuances of this painter or the background in order to go to an art gallery and appreciate the art that is on the walls. And I think that's what we encourage people to do, right? We encourage people to look at art and go and appreciate what's up there. And if you're interested in it, then absolutely go learn some more about the history and how all these people work together. And that's where I want to go with math. It's pretty, it's beautiful, it's elegant, it's nice to look at. You don't have to understand all the nuances in order to be able to appreciate these results and see that these results are beautiful. We'll just use that word. And I wish that we would do a better job of getting that to come out in the classroom. Obviously, in a math classroom, you need the background and you need to know the quadratic formula and you need to know that 2 + 2 = 4, mostly. But I wish that we would also instill a larger sense of just appreciation for the subject in our students, and that it's cool to see math used and to do math even if you don't understand all of it.
It brings to mind, you mentioned math and the idea of you go to an art gallery. What if we were to do a math gallery here at WLC? I think that could be a groundbreaking idea. I don't know what formulas we would put up, but
that's a stunning formula.
Yeah. We'll work on that.
I can't take my eyes off it.
I do think it's interesting. You do see, some of the minds that are drawn to mathematics, there is this artistic quality, you know, that they are chasing to it, as you note. And I think that's something, I like the point of maybe someone doesn't get it all, but to sit back and to kind of marvel sometimes at how these things fit together. With that in mind, you're teaching at a Christian college. I know you're very involved at your church. Is there anything... there's no such thing as Christian math. There's no Jesus way around, A squared, B squared. But is there anything that you think as a Christian college or as a Christian that should drive us maybe even more to have an interest in math as a field or an appreciation for what math does?
So I don't bring it into my classes directly, but one of my colleagues in the lower level classes in Math for Life and in elementary statistics brings in this is how you can use math to model phenomenon associated with creation and with the everyday world around you. And this is how you can see God's hand in nature and in other aspects of life by using math. So I think that's one really cool way to be able to appreciate it as a Christian. And I would also say that a Christian has a responsibility to be a well-informed citizen of planet Earth. That's in your disclaimer, right? We'll go back there.
Yep.
So knowing math is a big part of that. And again, it doesn't mean that you have to be able to spout off all of these facts or know how to do a problem that's set in front of you. But you should, as a Christian and as a responsible citizen, be able to sit down and read the newspaper and understand the statistics that are presented. And that's math. You should be able to go to the grocery store and know if the cashier gave you too much change and give it back because you're honest. And that's the basic of math. You should be able to have an appreciation for the subject and how everything fits together and how God created all of it, and that's math.
And I think that fits very well with the kind of the byline. Is it byline? The second line of our podcast title, A World Given Back to Us. To be able to delight in what God has created and what God gives. And as I mentioned, as someone whose math education did not go as far as it should have, I still do when I go over to GenRec, things like that, and even my students in class when they're talking about some of the work that they're doing elsewhere, I find myself often delighting in the joy that it can bring them to be exploring these truths, right? As Christians, one of the things we appreciate more than anything else is truth. And maybe, you know, you mentioned people don't understand with the calculator necessarily if something's wrong or right, but I think in my mind, math can also be a powerful place where we can still come together, and it's one of the areas where we still generally agree there's truth there, right?
Absolutely.
And it's something that can be pursued, and I think that's helpful for people to explore and appreciate as well.
I would agree, and I think that that's where you get into higher level math, which doesn't deal with numbers all that much, but there's absolute truth and absolute facts, and there's a variety of different ways to getting to the right answer, to the end answer, but there always is a right answer or an end answer. I always joke that I would be completely awful at teaching a philosophy class because I need to know what the answer is before I ask the question, and you can't do that in the humanities, and you can't do that in areas over here, but I love the fact that there's always a right answer. I also love the fact that there are 14 different ways to get there.
I think as we get close to the close of the episode, we wouldn't want to do so without inviting our other guest to share a thought or ask a question. Nicholas, do you have anything for any of us or just a thought or a question for Dr. Meyer?
So if I was to seek a government a governmental math job, previously mentioned, if my math meet wins, wouldn't get me the job, which hopefully they would me saying that 7 times 70 equals 210 jeopardize my my career?
I don't know here. We got some issues there.
Nick does, and I think maybe we can go out with this question. He does bring up an interesting question, and you hit on it earlier. If we have students in, let's say, their middle school, high school, and they're interested in mathematics and they're interested in maybe doing something, any particular advice you would have for them as they kind of explore what they enjoy or think about where they may like to go with it?
I would encourage them to remember, and this is hard in middle school and high school because you don't really see it until college, but exploring that math is more than just numbers and just the equations that you are memorizing and that you need to know. And that's fine, and that's the base knowledge that you have to have. But know that there is so much more out there in the world of math, and that is just a very, very small part of it. So if you don't like that, that's okay. There's other places you can go with math and other areas that you can learn, and they don't all deal with numbers, and they are all beautiful. And what you do in grade school isn't real math. It's math, but it's not real math in terms of everything that you can possibly study.
I think it's a great answer to help push people on, and I feel like I need to come up with that good of an answer for the humanities. Now, we thank Dr. Meyer and Nicholas for joining us today. And as we've considered big questions like the DH or pitcher's batting or modern education and then also mathematics, there sometimes are as many questions that come up as answers. So many things to explore in this world given back to us. And as we do so, Christy, what is the only thing that we can do?
Let the bird fly.
Goes down, get with my party, and I begin to cry. I don't care what the people are thinking.